Tonight, we're going to be learning actually a little bit ahead. In the past, we've gone backwards. So tonight, we're going to start with Yud Zayin Amud Bet, and then we're going to actually learn Yud Chet and a little tiny line from Yud Chet Amud Bet. And we're going to be talking mostly about the Inyan of Shvitat Kelim and having Malacha happen on Shabbos, which is caused by you on Erev Shabbat. The Daf Yomi for today is actually Yud Zayin. So we're going to be doing the tail end of today's Daf Yomi and then the beginning of tomorrow's Daf Yomi. So we're starting with the Mishnah at the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Bet. But for this Mishnah's context, you have to know that we are in the middle of a whole conversation about the day that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel met in the attic of, one second, I just want to get the name right. The attic, unless there's somebody who learned Daf Yomini or remembers the name by heart, based on the Mishnah on Yud Gimel Amud Bet. These are the halachot that were taught in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkiah ben Garon. That one time they went up and there were more members of Beit Shammai than Beit Hillel, and they made a whole bunch of gzeras. Beit Shammai made a whole bunch of gzeras on that day. Yud Chet Gzerot, 18 gzerot, they managed to overpower the Beit Hillel. Truth is that many of them we don't keep. So obviously their effect was temporary. But these are amongst them.
Is there any way you can make this page a little bigger?
Can I make the page? Sure I can. Hold on one second. How's that?
Amazing.
Okay.
So that's good.
I can send a link to the Gemara on the group if you want.
That's true, but I think it's easier if everybody looks at what I'm looking at. I thought about that. But then I could just sit and look at my own Gemara also. But I think it's easier if everybody looks at it. Matthew, are you taking a picture of the screen? Tell me you're not taking a picture of the screen. All right, anyways. So the Mishnah on Yud Zayin Amud Bet is telling us about several different machloksos between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. It's a bunch of different small halachot, mostly in the same vein, mostly having to do with the same thing. So we'll start. Mishnah says, Beit Shammai omrim ein shorin dio v'samanim v'karshinin. Beit Shammai say that you're not allowed to soak ink and herbs in order to make a dye or for food on Erev Shabbat. You're not allowed to do that on Erev Shabbat unless it's going to complete its processing on Erev Shabbat. You can't do it in such a way that it's going to continue into Shabbat. But Beit Hillel, they disagree. They say that you're allowed to. They said that you are allowed to do that. The next one is, Beit Shammai say that you're not allowed to put these pieces of flax into the oven so that they catch fire and change state. You're not allowed to do that while it's still Friday afternoon unless it's going to complete its processing before Shabbat. Also, to put wool into a pot, so that it also completes its processing. As Beit Shammai said, you can do that only insofar as it completes its processing on Friday afternoon. But if its processing will continue on to Shabbos, then you're not allowed to do it. Beit Hillel Matirin. So far, basically, very similar dinim, and it continues. Beit Shammai omrim ein porsin metzudot chayav ofot v'dagim ela kedei sheyatzunu mibod yom. Beit Hillel matirin. You're not allowed to put out animal traps on Erev Shabbat unless you know that the animals are going to be caught on Erev Shabbat. How you know when the animals are going to be caught is a good question. But the idea is that the animals must be caught on Erev Shabbat. You can't catch animals on Shabbat. That's malacha of tzad. Beit Hillel say, no problem. You're allowed to do that even if they're going to be caught on Shabbos. Then
the way you know that the animals are caught on Shabbat is if you remove the traps before Shabbat.
Yeah. Or you could pay attention and notice. But then again, when you're putting them out, so you're saying, Dad, you're saying that you have to be makbid to take them away once Shabbos comes in. But it's a little strange.
According to this view.
Yeah, but it's a little strange because, meaning, how can you tell somebody don't do this when really what you're really saying is don't do this unless you're going to remove them before Shabbat. It's a little strange. Okay. So now we get into that's a whole set of dinim. Basically, the common denominator is that the processing of the malacha must occur on Erev Shabbat, according to Beit Shammai, whereas according to Beit Hillel, no problem, you're allowed to have them continue even onto Shabbat. Now we get to a little bit of a new din. Beit Shammai omrim ein mochrin lenochri vein tonin imo vein magbin alav ela kedei sheyagi lemakom karov. It's similar, but it says that you're not allowed to sell an object, a large object, to a non-Jew, or place a large objects onto his mule, so that he has to carry it on Shabbos, unless he's going to a very close place. Why is it important that he's going to a close place? So Rashi says, so close that he'll get there before Shabbos comes in. In other words, you're not allowed to give things to a non-Jew to carry for you on Shabbos. Beit Hillel, of course, Matirin, they say it's fine. So here it's not an actual malacha necessarily that is happening. This is even a step removed. This is, you know, having a non-Jew do something for you. Beit Shammai says that it has to complete its processing before Shabbos. Beit Shammai omrim enot nin orot la'abdan v'lo kelim l'chobes nochri ela kadei she'yasu mibod yom. Same thing, you're not allowed to give hides to a non-Jewish, what's the name for that? Hider?
A tanner.
Tanner, thank you. A person who tans the hides, unless he's going to finish it on Erev Shabbos. Same thing for laundry and for doing your laundry. You can only give it to the launderer if he's going to do it on Erev Shabbos. But if he's going to do it on Shabbos, then it's a problem. And Beit Hillel says, whole thing is fine. No problem.
Can I ask a question here? We said before, Beit Shammai ein mochrin lenachri. Once I've sold it to the Nachri, it's his.
Correct.
I'm not responsible for what he does with his property on Shabbos.
Correct. Why do you think it's going to be a problem?
I ask you. I don't know.
Because people are going to think that you gave it to him to carry for you. They don't know that you sold it. So you're talking about an object that is identifiably yours. So for example, you sold him your surfboard, right? Everybody knows that's your surfboard. Maybe it even has your name on it. He hasn't monogrammed it for himself yet. And now he's carrying around your surfboard. People are going to say, oh, he's carrying the surfboard to the beach for Shabbos.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So that's Beit Hillel Matirim. That's the last one. Beit Hillel Matirim. Im Hashemesh. Beit Hillel say that you can do it all the way till the end. Obviously, you can't do it on Shabbos, but Beit Hillel say you can do it all the way till the end, as long as the sun is still shining. Rav Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Noagin ayu Beit Abba shahiu notnin kli leven choves lavan, kli lavan lechoves nachri, shlosha yamin kodem Shabbat, v'shavin elu ve'elu shetonin korat Beit Abad v'igulei agat. Okay, those are two dinim, I apologize. Rav Shimon Gamliel tells a story. He says, my father, who is Rav Shimon Gamliel's father?
Rav Gamliel.
Rav Gamliel, who actually was pretty much associated with Beit Shammai. So his minog was that, like Beit Shammai, but even more, an extreme version of Beit Shammai, he wouldn't give his suit to the dry cleaner 3 days before Shabbat. He had to give it on a Tuesday. He wouldn't give it on a Wednesday because he was worried that the non-Jew is going to do it on Shabbat, or he's going to seem like he's doing it on Shabbat, and that's what he was concerned for. And then finally, the last din is everybody agrees, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agree, Shetonin Koran Beit Abad Veguli Hagat. What does that mean? That you're allowed to set up the, Rashi says, the Zeitim Bekorot Beit Abad, V'anavim Veguli Hagat. These are the presses, the wine press and the olive press. You're allowed to put them in on Erev Shabbat, even though what? What's going to happen?
They're going to be pressed on Shabbat.
Well, they're not gonna. Nobody's gonna actually press them on Shabbat. That would be asur. But what is gonna happen? The weight of the actual anavim and zeitim will cause them to
start to squeeze it out.
Exactly, will cause them to bleed, so to speak. Right? Rashi says, "Lo ayu otzer natan begalgal kamo shalanu elatonin natan bekorot kvedin v'hani degat kari igulin sheyudapin." It would end up being that the weight would actually squeeze them out on Shabbos, which should be a problem, but it was not a problem. if we look, if you keep looking, Rashi says something strange, which I wish we had time to talk about, but we don't have so much. He's the Gemara is itself will ask, Parach Maishna de lo pligi Beit Shammai. Why do Beit Shammai not argue with this? And it says, Dinami avid lo b'shabbat leka chiyuv chatat. Because even if you were to do it on Shabbos, there would be no chiyuv chatas. Even if you were to squeeze it out on Shabbos, there would be no chiyuv chatas. Now, this is strange for two reasons. Number one, why is there no chiyuv chatat for squeezing out olives and grapes? It should be schita or dash. It should be dash. That's a malacha on Shabbos, dash. When you squeeze
out. But
that's
not my intention when I put it there.
But okay, but it's happening on its own. You put it there. Of course, it is your intention. You want to squeeze out the olives and the grapes.
No, I want to come back after Shabbos and squeeze it out. I'm not.
Okay, but
my intention isn't to squeeze it on Shabbat.
I don't think you can't claim that it's a delo nichale or anything like that, or that it's davishen. You know that when you put it there, it's going to happen, and it's good. You do want that to happen. That's good stuff. That's good juices that you're going to get.
Okay.
The second thing that's strange about it, though, aside from that, is that what are we saying about all the other things that were mentioned in the Mishnah? All the other things that were mentioned in the Mishnah, we're talking about taking dio and making it into what's it called?
They all have to be completed on Friday before Shabbat.
Correct, but Rashi says the reason why Beit Shammai, the Gemara seems to say the reason why Beit Shammai doesn't think it's a problem is because there's no malacha by schitat zeitim, right? But there's no malacha, but there is, oh, sorry, I apologize. He thinks there's no malacha over there, and I gave an example where there is a malacha, but there are other ones where there's no malacha, like, for example, with the Nochri. Okay.
It looks like the Psikresha de Nichale.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so that's less of a problem. Mm-hmm. 1 second. I think Matthew's trying to tell me something, but Matthew, I'm recording it by me.
I was about to say, Pinchas, is this an example of a psik ratio?
No, I mean, this one's definitely not an example of psik ratio. You know exactly
I'm
what you're
talking about. The olive press and the grape press.
Why is it psik ratio? You put the olive press in there and it causes, if you were to do this.
It's an inevitable outcome.
Yes, but it's an inevitable outcome that you intend. Not everything is a psik ratio. Some things are actually a malacha. Psik ratio.
The question goes back. That's back to the question I asked before. Is it my intent for the juice to come out now? What if I'm just putting it there because I need to store it someplace? So I'm putting it there, and I'll come back after Shabbos and press it out.
If you were doing that, then you're right. It would be a psik ratio. But that's not what you're doing. People are putting them in the press because they want it to happen. They just don't want to do it before Shabbos. They don't have time, so they put it there. Either way.
Coming back to your question, what's the difference between putting the dye into the water and then leaving it and putting the grapes into the press and then leaving it? Why is Beit Shammai happy with the one? I mean, not happy with the one and happy with the other?
So that's what Rashi is claiming. Rashi is claiming that that schita of, he seems to be saying, schitat zeitim v'anavim is not an av malacha. Well, it's not chiyuv chatat. And that's what he says over here. The chiyamin and schitat zeitim v'anavim av malacha. When we say it is, hani mili v'zeitim v'anavim shalo riskan mi ba'od yom. It has to be that you did some work on them on Erev Shabbos. The havalei mefarek davar mimasa'o. Hagado b'tochov. He told the dash. Aval hacha, over here, einot in kora al b'gabei zeitim ad shetochnin tchila b'rechayim. He says there's usually some processing that you do beforehand. Saying this, you know, it sounds like just taking a grape and squeezing it, or just taking an olive and squeezing it, it's not an amalacha. That's what Rashi seems to be saying over here. Okay. Let's get to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, man tana netinat mayim l'diyo zohi shriyatan. Okay, hold on a second here. We're saying that taking water and ink, right? We're saying that taking water and ink, that is a malacha. What malacha would it be? Soveya. It's going to be, is it soveya? Yeah, it's soveya. It's soveya, but it's also malacha of lush. That's actually what the Gemara is interested in. Gemara is interested in lush. When he says, Zoe Shriyatan, that when you take ink and you put it into water, then that's considered shriya, which is the malacha of lush, of, what do we call that? It's not kneading, because it's, well, it is kneading.
Blending?
Blending, okay, yeah, blending. Rashi says, "Va'afa bisha lo gibel hadio zo ishiato." This is the key. What's gibel? Gibel is to need, right? Usually, lush is taking something liquid, combining it with something solid, and then creating a blended material, which is in between, like a dough, usually. Okay. Now that usually involves kneading, right, with your hands. But what happens if you just drop the DO into the water, and then that creates the mixture that you want, which is a thicker mixture. It's obviously a very thick DO. What happens if you do that without doing anything, right? Rashi says, "Shelo gibel ha-DO zo yishriyato." It doesn't actually congeal by hand. So who says that that's a malacha? Because that's what we seem to be assuming. Otherwise, Beit Shammai would have no problem with you doing it on Erev Shabbos because you'd be able to do it on Shabbos. So who says it's a problem? I'm Rav Yosef Rabihi. This is Rabbi. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. How do we know? The Tanya, the Braita teaches us, Echad noten et hakemach ve'echad noten et hamayim, ha'acharon chayav, divei Rabbi. Rabbi Yosi omer, eno chayav ad shiigabel. Okay, we have a Braita here, machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you take kemach, you take flour, and you put it together with water, right? So if you have, let's say, this is a case of Shnaim Shasu, or a kind of Azer Chazer, really, where one person poured the flour, another person poured the water, and what did you get in the end, of course, by doing that? You get dough. So what happens if you do that, and you don't actually do anything to it? You just leave it like that until it congeals and creates dough. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says, you're chayev, and who's chayev? The person who put in the last ingredient. Rabbi Yosi says, no, nobody's chayev. Nobody's going to be chayev until you actually do the malacha of gibul, which is an integral part of lisha, right? So who would be the one who says that pouring dio into water is going to be the malacha of lisha? That's going to be Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Okay. So the Gemara says, well, not so fast. Amrle Abaye v'dilma adkan lo ka'amar Rabbi Yosi. Well, maybe Rabbi Yosi disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda Anasi only in the case of kemach, because there, dough requires you to do lisha. Rabbi Yosi says you can't get anywhere without doing gibul. You can't get anywhere without doing the kneading. But with dio into water, you don't have to do anything. You just leave it. It'll dissolve into it, and you'll get the tzava. So maybe even Rabbi Yosi agrees that with dio, you don't have to actually do gibul. Dio, the lav bar gibul, hu eim alechayev. So the Gemara says, lo salgo daitach, the tanya echad noten et ha'efer, ve'echad noten et ha'mayim, ha'acharon chayav, divir Rabbi. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda omer, ad shiigabel. No, because we actually have a braita that talks exactly about, well, almost exactly about what we're talking about in our Mishnah, because it talks about putting water together with afer. What's afer? Afer is ashes, right? So ashes is like the DO. You don't actually have to do anything to it, right? They combine by itself. There's nothing that a human needs to do. It's lav bar gibulhu. And nevertheless, Rabbi Yosi over there still says that you're not chayav ad sheyigabel, even though it's not bar gibul. In other words, Rabbi Yosi says you can't be chayav for lisha over there. Now the Gemara says something interesting. It says, no, maybe not. V'dilma my efer afar. Maybe when the Braisa says efer, it really means afar. And afar is dust, which Rashi says is bar gibulhu. The Ticho Binyan, you take dust and water, you make mud, and eventually that can be a building material, but you have to be Megabel, you have to knead it. Now, this is a striking thing. It says Afar and Afar. Why would we make a mistake of Afar and Afar? How can we make a mistake of Afar and Afar? They're two different things. No? Pinchas, what do you say?
Abraham said to the Rebbeinu Shalom, arguing over Saddam, ki Afar va'Afar anochi.
That's a good source. That's a good source. What's a better source? With the para aduma. What is it over there? The para aduma. Yes. What do we put into the water? How is it spelled in the Torah?
That's an aleph.
But how is it spelled, if I remember correctly, how is it spelled in the Torah when it says it? if I remember correctly, it's spelled with an ayin. Even though it's really supposed to be Afer, it's spelled Afar.
Yeah.
Correct? So it tells you that they're somewhat interchangeable. I'll just verify that right now because I had it in
Where is that? I can look. Is that at the beginning of Chukah?
I'll tell you right now. Hold on 1 second. The Afer and Afar business is... Where did I see it? Where's it Rashi? According to the Maritz Chayot. I can tell you, it's in, I believe, the Maritz Chayot at the back of my Gemara. I believe quotes this. This is his explanation for the Gemara. 1 second. Yud Chet Amud Aleph. And I have over here. No, I don't have it here. So where did I see it?
It's Efer HaPara with Aleph.
It is Efer HaPara with an Aleph? So hold on 1 second. Let me just look up something.
Pasuk Tet. Yes.
I'm looking at it now. Yechibesh HaSefet Efer HaPara Et Begadav with an Aleph.
Hold on.
And this is another place with an Ayin. This one has an Aleph.
Okay, give me 1 second. Let me find something.
Afterwards,
the Midbar
Yud Zayin,
exactly. There it is.
Oh, nice, very nice.
Okay, that's what the Maritz Chayit quotes. Yud Zayin. Okay, so they're somewhat interchangeable, but the Gemara is not so happy with it. The Gemara says Vatanya Afer, but it says Afer. Vatanya Afer, Vatanya Afer, Midi Gabi Hadadi Tanya. So it says. There may be two different brisas, but they're written by two different Tanaim, so therefore it could be that there was a mistake made by both Tanaim. Okay, so that's what the Gemara concludes. How does the Gemara conclude? So we're not actually certain exactly who's the author of this din of the Mayim and the Dio. Fine. Now, here's the important part. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, new brisa. Potkin Mayim Legina, Erev Shabbat Im Chashecha. You can open up the water like a causeway in the water on Erev Shabbat. You can make a trench, even though what's going to happen when you make that trench? It's going to irrigate your garden, which is a violation of Zoreah. But you did it on Erev Shabbat, so it's okay. You're allowed to put an incense underneath your clothing, even though it's going to scent the clothing, which is actually an Esr D'Rabbanan. And then finally, it says Mitgafren v'hochin kol yom Shabbat kulo. You can put sulfur under kelim for the sake of engraving on them. That's how you make them hard, so you can engrave on them. And then finally, umenichen kolar kilor al gebe ha'ayin v'splanet al gebe makah. You can put a bandage over your eye or on a wound in order to cause it to heal. Okay, so that could be a violation of refuah on Shabbat. Mitrapet v'olechet kol yom kulo. So you can do all these things on Erev Shabbat, even though they lead to a violation of Shabbat to happen on Shabbat. Aval ein notnin chitin l'toch arechayim shal mayim ela p'chadei sheyitchinu mibo'od yom. However, the Baita concludes, you're not allowed to put, wheat kernels into a windmill, which will crush them, right? Imagine a water-powered windmill, which its whole job is to crush.
Wind-powered
or water-powered, doesn't matter. a watermill or a windmill, you're right. Such that it will crush the chita on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that unless it completely crushes it on Erev Shabbat. End of Braita. Okay? Now I stop there. And you guys have to explain to me, what's the difference between this windmill or watermill or whatever it is and the rest of the dinim? Why is it that I'm allowed to do all the other things, but I'm not allowed to do this? What do you think?
Tochen and Av Melacha and Adat Toledot or something?
Tochen is generally considered Av Melacha, yes. But then again, so is Zoreah, being Mashke Mayim.
but it's a tolada zoreh. It's not mamash zoreh. It's a kind of tolada zoreh.
Tolada is also a midah, right?
Can you repeat?
Well, could resemble a business activity. The other's not a really personal thing.
Say again.
So the grinding could resemble a business activity, doing it as part of a business, where the others are much more of a personal nature.
Have you ever walked by the shul when the sprinklers turn on Shabbos? Does it make you feel weird?
Yeah. But it's not, I'm saying you're not doing it for business gain. You're doing it for your personal.
Okay, but what happens if you're a farmer and you do that for your field? There's no problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's exactly what the Gemara is bothered by. This is the Gemara. It's good that you don't know the answer, because the Gemara doesn't know the answer yet. It's a machlokas. What's the deal? So my taima, the Gemara says, what's the problem with the last one, with the tochein barei chayim? Amar Rabba, famous line, mipnei mashma mashmaat kol. It's because the windmill or the watermill, as it's doing its grinding, it makes a lot of noise. Okay, the grinding that happens. And what is the noise happening? What are we concerned with? That the noise is happening on Shabbat. And all the other problems that we were talking about before, all the other malachot or violations of Shabbat, they weren't going to cause loud noise to happen on Shabbat. They weren't mashmiya kol. That's how Rabba understands this braita.
Is mashmiya kol a malacha on Shabbos?
No, it's not a malacha. So
why am I concerned about it?
Good question. So Rashi says, Rashi explains the Mishnah this way. And he says, mipnei shamashmat et hakol v'avsha milta b'shabbos v'ikaziluta. Says because it makes a lot of noise, and it's a avsha milta has no really great. It's a disgraceful thing. It's a disgusting thing. It's degrading to Shabbat, and it's a degradation of Shabbat to have a loud noise on Shabbat, especially from something that is really, you know, a malacha, even if it's happening by itself. That kind of loud noise is a problem on Shabbat.
Would you say the same about people standing in front of the shul and having loud conversations on a Friday night?
I think our neighbors
disturbing
would.
The neighbors across the street who don't appreciate it.
I think our neighbors would, but I've never heard anybody say that you can't yell on Shabbat because of Mashmiya Kol.
Okay.
Maybe there's a reason why. So that's Rabba's opinion, but that's not everybody's opinion. That's not how everybody explains this braita. Amar le Rav Yosef, v'lema mar mishum shvitat kelim. No, maybe the problem is shvitat kelim. You're having your windmill or your watermill work for you on Shabbos. Okay. Now, what's the problem? Now, if you take a peek at Rashi, so Rashi says, dichtiv le'el mina leman yanuach shorcha v'chamorcha. That you have to have your animals rest on Shabbos. So if you have to have your animals rest on Shabbos, so maybe you also have to have your property, your machines, your objects rest on Shabbos as well. Maybe you're not allowed to have them work for you.
Isn't the problem here that you put the wheat in the windmill? If there was no wheat in the windmill and the windmill was still turning, that seems to be okay.
Yeah, because there's no malacha. Tochein to the malacha.
Right.
So Rav Yosef says, "Leima mar mishum shvitat kelim." The Tanya b'chol asher amarti aleichem tishmeru lirbot shvitat kelim. He wants to say that it's actually biblically prohibited, that shvitat kelim is a problem midaraisa, that we are obligated midaraisa to make sure that our property does not do malacha on Shabbos. So he says maybe that's the problem. Ela amar Rav Yosef mishum shvitat kelim v'hashad amarta lebeit hilal idlu shvitat kelim daraita. Okay, so hold on 1 second. So Rav Yosef says maybe the problem is shvitat kelim, and it's based on the Brayta. Now, who holds of shvitat kelim? So we don't know yet. But the Gemara says, what do you say?
Rav Yosef says
that that's what the Brayta means. Okay. So our next question could be, well, who's the author of the Brayta? If Rav Yosef is right, who's the one who says that we're not allowed to actually have our machines work on Shabbat? But before we even get to that.
Back in the Mishnah, we weren't worried about the wine or olive press working on Shabbat.
Correct, because there's no chiyuv chatas, we could say, over there, because there's no real malacha. That's what I think Rashi says. That's what the Gemara says. later on. But before we even get to that, before we get to the Mishnah, Mike, what about the Braisa itself? The Gemara says, what are you talking about? So what are you saying? You're saying that even according to Beit Hillel, there's Shvitat Kelim is Asur Midaraita. So then how do we explain this Braisa exactly? Gafrit Umugmar, my time Asharu. Why are you allowed to, you know, light your Gafrit and Mugmar before Shabbat? And have that give incense to your clothes and cause it to become hard, and et cetera, et cetera. That's also using your property on Shabbat. My Tama Sharu, why is that mutter? So the Gemara answers, Mishum Delo Ka'avid Maaseh. Oh, because you set a fire on Erev Shabbat, there's no Maaseh that's happening with your property anymore. In other words, it's happening, you know, basically of itself. There's no Maaseh. Okay, fine.
It's really happening to my property, but my property is not doing anything.
Fair enough. Also, Onin Shal Pishtan, my time Asharu, Mishum Dilavin Masa, same story with the Pishtan, which got, what happened to the Pishtan again? The Pishtan, what was the Pishtan? Can't remember the Pishtan. Oh, the Pishtan was from our Mishnah, wasn't it? Yeah, the Pishtan was dropped into the, what's it called? Was that dropped into? Ink, that was ink, put into no? The tanur.
It's put into the ink.
No, that was put into the tanur. It was put into the oven so that it would get warm before Shabbat. So he doesn't want it to happen on Shabbat. Fine. Either way, though, so you're using the tanur, right? The tanur is being used. My time is shami shem tolav in masa. No, the tanur also is not doing anything because menach naicha. It's just sitting there. It's just sitting there. The fire is the one doing the malacha. Okay, fine. What about the mitzudat chayav of vidagim? What about the traps? The traps close on Shabbat, right? That's how they work. The animal steps its foot into the trap. Boom. That's a maaseh, right? So why would that be a problem? Why isn't that a problem according to Beit Hillel? So he says, "My time is sharu hatam nami belechi uva kukri." The lokavid masa. No. We're talking about specific traps. What kind of traps are we talking about? Traps with hooks, and traps with just boxes that have serrated edges going the other way, so that once the animal goes into it, it can't go out. But we're not talking about anything that has any moving parts. So as long as it doesn't have any moving parts, then it's not doing anything for me on Shabbat. And so maybe Beit Hillel will say that those are all cases where you're not worried about Shvitat Kelim, even though you normally are worried about Shvitat Kelim. We only really worry about Shvitat Kelim when your property actually does something, like a watermill or a windmill, which is spinning on Shabbat and causing Malacha to happen almost actively. That's the only time that is really a problem, according to Beit Hillel. That's what Rav Yosef wants us to believe. Okay. Fine, so that's what Rav Yosef wants us to believe about Beit Hillel, that even Beit Hillel holds of Shvitat Kelim. So then the Gemara says, well, Hashta da Amar of Oshaya Amar Vasi, man tana Shvitat Kelim daraisa, Beit Shamayhi, velo Beit Hillel. But wait a second, this whole thing was one big mistake. We can't associate Beit Hillel with this Braita, because Beit Hillel, according to Rav Oshaya, do not hold of Shvitat Kelim. Stop trying to kvetch all these things into the Mishnah, and Beit Hillel really thinks it's okay because it's not doing a maaseh, but normally it is a problem. No, that's not what's happening. Beit Hillel does not believe in Shvitat Kelim. There is no Shvitat Kelim. You're allowed to have your property do whatever it wants for you on Shabbat. It's Beit Shammai who holds that there's a problem. So Beit Shammai, Bein Kavid Masa, Bein Delo Kavid Masa, Asur. Le Beit Hillel, Afagav De Kavid Masa, Shari. Beit Shammai thinks it's a problem no matter what. Beit Hillel thinks it's a problem never. And now, but now, what are we saying? We're saying that who's the author of the Braita, really? According to this, who's the author of the Braita?
Beit Shammai.
Beit Shammai. Maybe the author of the Braita is Beit Shammai. But now the question gets flipped around. If the author of the Braita is Beit Shammai, then we understand the Rechaim. But now what don't we understand?
Is allowing Mugmar.
Yeah, the Gafrit and the Mugmar and the Isplanit al Gabi HaMakah and all the other cases. So why is he allowing those? So the Gemara says, Yachi, Mugmar, VeGafrit. I'm going to make it bigger. Gafrit, Maitaima, Sharu, Beit Shammai. Hatam, Manach, Aara. Oh, Beit Shammai has a special heter. Beit Shammai is a special heter when the object is attached to the ground. Okay?
Is what?
It's attached to the ground. In other words, if you're a kli, if the kli that we're talking about is attached to the ground, if it's menach naicha, a'ara, if it's mamash, implanted into the ground, hold on 1 second, if it's mamash implanted into the ground, then it's not a problem. So the incense or the sulfur is on the ground, and the other cases are also on the ground. Now, what does this mean for the Rechaim? I'm not sure.
What do we mean by attached to the ground as opposed to just standing on the ground?
So,
I mean, a windmill is on the ground, but do you say it's attached?
So Rashi says, Hamanchi bekelim. He says, actually doesn't say that it's in the ground. I'm sorry, it's the opposite. Wait, 1 second. Mugur Maitamisharu, Hamanchi bekelim. Ah, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm right. Gafrit ba'ara. The gafrit and the mugmar were sitting on the ground when it gets on fire. And so because it's sitting on the ground, it's not a problem. Now, how do we know that Beit Shammai really holds this way? So the Gemara says, actually, we think it's the opposite. So it says, Gigit v'ner v'gedera v'shipud maitai masharu Beit Shammai. Why does Beit Shammai allow you to brew beer in a barrel for more than a week and leave food in a pot on a fire? Why do they allow you to do that? So they really kvetch and they say, oh, this is a the Krat Pesach. This is the answer, the Krat Pesach. My time is Beit Shammai de mafker lehu afkuri. Because basically, what did you do before Shabbat?
Mafkir.
You mafkir the kelim. You did a mechiras chametz on all of your kelim before Shabbat. That's the way to get out of everything, according to Beit Shammai. Get out of everything.
They do it every week.
Mafkir your kelim. Yeah. V'shuv enu mitzuva al shvitatan. So every week, part of Bamei Madlikin, Beit Shammai would be machker all of their kelim, I guess, and make sure that they didn't have any kelim going into Shabbos. Okay? Fine. That's the Gemara. There's a few issues I wanted to cover over here. Does anybody have any questions before we get to the sources? Okay, well, actually, before we...
Couldn't it be mafkir the chita before Shabbos? And then the mill could work.
Or he could mafkir the mill.
Or the mill, yeah.
I guess in theory, I'm not sure why he can't. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why he can't. Now, hold on 1 second. Sorry. Give me some water. Here's my question. So there's two shitot at the end of the Gemara, right? There's Rav Yosef. And there's Rabbah. Rabbah thinks the only issue that is interesting in the Braita, who's the author of the Braita according to Rabbah? Who's the Tana in the Braita? This is the Braita, so it's not necessarily Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. But what I mean is, whose position is it following? Uh-huh. Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel?
That's the question.
Well, according to Rabbah, it's Beit Hillel, it seems. Mm-hmm. It seems reasonable to assume it's Beit Hillel. And the only problem with the Rechaim is Hashmat Kol. According to Rav Yosef, the Bright is really Beit Shammai, and Rechaim is completely in line with his Shita. And there's no such thing as Hashmat Kol. Okay? I just wanted to make that clear before we get to the sources. Okay. So now that we're at the sources, everybody can still see my screen, right? You see Shabbat Yud Zayin Yud Chet Shvitat Kelim?
Yes.
Let's get back to the basics. The truth is, I was actually having a conversation about this with one of my colleagues at work a few weeks ago, and he was saying how religious Jews come up with solutions to all of their halachic problems, even when it seems dishonest. He says, religious Jews are really dishonest because anytime there's a problem in Shabbat or in Kashrut, they can always find ways out of it, find ways to do what they want to do. So I think he was giving us an example. Remember a few weeks ago when they allowed the McDonald's in the airport to serve both To be open on Shabbat. That's what it was. They allowed the McDonald's and the airport to be open on Shabbat and still be kosher. Was it the McDonald's? Does anybody know? You remember?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It was the McDonald's, and that was allowed to be kosher. And so my colleagues were like, how could they allow this? I don't understand. If it's not kosher, it's not kosher. If you're not allowed to be open on Shabbat and it makes you not kosher, then it's not kosher. So I said, no. Well, I mean, legally, they said that the Rabbanut says that it can have a din, basically, of like being like a hotel. Just like the Rabbanut allows the hotels to be open on Shabbat and to serve food, so too they allow over here. Now, the McDonald's is not allowed to cook. They weren't allowed to cook. They weren't allowed to cook on Shabbat. All the food had to be prepared from before Shabbat. That was the deal. If you want to eat in the McDonald's, gesundheit. But that was the deal.
The hamburgers.
But my colleague was like, how could they allow this? I don't understand. You can just decide when it's a hotel, when it's not a hotel. Now, my point was that this was much more of a policy issue. It wasn't a halachic issue, meaning deciding whether something is more like a hotel or less like a hotel is not something you're going to find in the Shulchan Aruch. But from there, he went on to say that, you know, Jews are always finding their way out of things. And for example, he was saying, you know, I know that Jews use alarm clocks to turn on their lights on Shabbat.
Use timers.
Timers, yeah. So I said, what's the problem? He says, what do you mean, what's the problem? They're turning lights on Shabbat. So I said, no, they're not. They're turning lights on before Shabbat. They're causing light to turn on Shabbat from before Shabbat. He didn't see a difference. He didn't see a difference. And no matter how hard I tried to explain it to him, he still didn't see a difference. So now we're going to see the Rambam and whether the Rambam and the Nimuki Yosef do a good job of explaining the difference. And the Rambam doesn't really do a very good job of explaining the difference. He doesn't try. The Rambam just says as follows. Mutar lecha tchila. You're allowed to do a malacha on Erev Shabbat, even if it ends up causing, or even ends, meaning it goes straight into Shabbat, straight through, and continues into Shabbat. Why? Because we're not allowed, the only yisur is to do malacha b'itzumo shel yom, on the day. However, when you do a malacha before Shabbat, we're allowed to get hana'a from what happens on Shabbat, mimela, meaning on its own. We're allowed to get hana'a from it. Okay? Fine. Now that's the Rambam over here. Then the Nimuki Yosef has a little bit more of an issue. This Nimuki Yosef is actually in Bava Kama. He was one of the great Rishonim. It was like, I think, the time of the Ran. And he was learning a sugya in Bava Kama. And as he was learning it, he was bothered by the halacha on Shabbat. He was learning the sugya called Isho Mishum Chitzav. Anybody want to explain what Isho Mishum Chitzav means? So Isho is Eish. Mishum Chitzav is because of your arrow. What does that mean? So it means we're obligated, if I start a fire and then my fire spreads to someone else's property and causes damage, I'm chayav, right? Mishum esh. It's one of the four things in the beginning of Bava Kama, correct?
Sure, now, why?
Why am I chayav? I didn't do it. I just started a fire over here. So one position says that I'm chayav because it's like I shot an arrow. What happens when you shoot an arrow? I pull back on the string. The arrow flies. Am I in contact with the arrow anymore? No, I'm not in contact with the arrow anymore. Can I claim, okay, I'm not responsible for what the arrow does?
No, you can't.
No, of course not. My arrow breaks somebody's window. I'm going to be chayav, even though I'm not connected to it anymore. So Eish is the same thing. Now, how does that work? So the Nimuki Yosef says, Ki'ilu biyadav hiv iro. It's like with your own hands, you caused the fire in the property of your friend, even though you didn't, even though you were over here and the fire is over there. So that's a rule. That's a rule. It's like you caused the fire. So what you do right now, even though a few minutes later it causes consequence somewhere else, and it happens a few minutes later, you're chayav for it. Yes? Do you see the problem over here?
You might apply this to the Shabbos clocks, the timers.
Why? How are you going to apply it?
Because what I'm doing now by setting the timer is going to turn on the light or turn it off.
Yeah.
During Shabbat.
Let's even forget the timers. Let's say I start a process of, I don't know, pick your process. I start a process of cooking.
I'm making a cholent.
Yeah, I start cholent. I start up, I cook up a cholent on Erev Shabbat, and it goes right into Shabbat. It's literally a fire, right? How is that any different? Why am I not chayav for that? So the Nebukadnezar says, V'kashi lecha, imkein, heichi sharinan im chashecha, lahadlik etanerot, v'hadlakata holechet v'nikmeret b'Shabbat. How am I allowed to light candles? Literally, on Erev Shabbat, I'm obligated. I'm obligated to light candles on Erev Shabbat. But that causes them to be lit on Shabbat. And I stir the bonfire and I cause it to burn on Shabbat. And this is even worse because when I caused damage, at least I didn't even intend to. It was actually a mistake. I started a fire over here and the fire got over there and I'm still chayav. But over here, I actually start the fire Erev Shabbat. And it keeps going until Shabbat. I did that on purpose. Why should I not be obligated for that on Shabbat? Why shouldn't it be considered a massive problem of Chilul Shabbat? That's his question.
Why are we drawing a parallel between Nazikin and Isurin?
Why not?
Because they're two totally different things.
They're two different things, but the principle is the same, right? The principle that we're learning from Nazikin, I hear you, Mayor. I could, you know, you could have given an answer like that. That's obviously an easy out to just say you can't learn from one to the other. But there is a principle over here that apparently the principle is that when you start a process, you are considered the actor all the way until the end of that process. That seems to be what we're supposed to be learning from Bava Kamma. You're right that we could just say, and it doesn't apply everywhere across the board, but... Sorry, Mike, did you say something?
I'm saying it's like it's a big jump to call that you're doing melacha all the time.
In what sense do you mean that?
Because in a way I'm supporting what Meir says. To say that I'm responsible for the Zikin as long as the fire is burning fine. But to say if I light a candle that lasts 24 hours through Shabbat, I'm doing constant melacha, it's a big jump to go from one to the other.
But the Nebuki Yosef is wondering why we don't make that jump. I mean, it's what we're saying is that you're responsible for the, if you're responsible in Ezekiel for the fire, then why are you not responsible for the fire on Shabbat? Why isn't it associated with you and your action? Now, I think you guys are all, I think you're all right, and we're going to get there, but we'll see his words for it. But he says, "Vim kol zet nan mishal shalin et ha-pesach le-tanur im ha-chashecha u-machizin et-or." Nevertheless, of course, we do this. So he says, "Kina'ayin b'milta shapir lo kashilan." He says, once you look into it for real, you realize there's no question. Sharei, chiyuvo mishum chitzav, kizorek ha-chetz shabasha, shiatza ha-chetz mitachat yado, bota sha na'aseh ha-kol. When you shoot an arrow, the moment you shoot the arrow, the moment it goes out of your hand, your involvement is over. It's complete. And it's not considered your actions from that point on. In other words, when the arrow hits, that's not considered like your action. Because he says, you can actually have a perversion over here if you do consider it that way. Because if we consider it that from the time that the arrow leaves your bow until it hits the wall, that you're actually doing something, and that's why you're responsible for it, because you're doing it, well, you can't not do it at that point, right? And because you can't not do it at that point, you shouldn't be obligated for it. You're onus. Once the arrow leaves your bow, you should say, oh, there's nothing I can do about it. But obviously nobody says that. And what are you going to say? What happens if you start a fire, right, that eventually rages into your neighbor's property, but you unfortunately drop dead in the interim, right? You start the fire and then you die. Who's responsible for the fire? Are we going to get up and say, well, obviously I didn't light the fire. Nobody can say that I'm doing the fire in my neighbor's property because I'm dead. So I can't be doing that, right? So are we going to say that my family is going to be patur because I didn't actually light anything on fire? Of course not. So it can't be that we're saying that you're actually doing it when it occurs. Elalav, shmamina, delav kamanda adlik hashta biyadayim, chashvinin lay. It's not that you're actually doing it with your hands. It's not that when you start a fire over here and the fire gets over there, it's like you're lighting it on fire, lighting your neighbor's property on fire. Rather, when your fire gets into your neighbor's property, it turns your act of lighting the fire in your property into an act of pshia, an act of criminal negligence. That your lighting of the fire, it was your lighting in your property that you're chayav for. Not the spread of the fire into your neighbor's property. The lighting in your property, that's what you're chayav for. So it was always, always about what you did yourself. Beginning, at that moment.
Beginning of it.
Exactly, the beginning. And now, v'chein adin le'inyan Shabbat. D'chi atchil me'erv Shabbat atchil. Ukman da'ag me'er bi'adayim b'hau idna delet be'isr chashiv. When you start a fire on Erev Shabbat, the only thing we're interested in was your lighting of the fire. It's true that it goes into Shabbat, but that's not, you're not actually involved anymore.
You did that Friday.
You're in Nezikin, Meir, this is what you're getting at. In Nezikin, you're responsible for the fire that happens. But it doesn't mean that you're actually lighting the fire there. On Shabbat, there's no malacha happening on Shabbat that you're responsible for. There's no responsibility on Shabbat. The only thing is your activity. Did you light a fire on Shabbat or did you not light a fire on Shabbat? And the answer is you didn't light a fire on Shabbat. There may be a fire that continues to rage on Shabbat, but you didn't light a fire on Shabbat.
So you're saying, let me understand this clearly. If I light a fire Erev Shabbat and it continues into my neighbor's property over Shabbat, I'm responsible in terms of the Nezikin.
Of course.
But I'm not liable for lighting a fire on Shabbat over there.
No, definitely not.
Is that what you were saying? Is that correct? 100%.
That's a great way to put your finger on the point. And just the Nimuki of Isser's point, it's more interesting in terms of Nezikin, is that we can't say that you're chayav for your neighbor's property because you lit his property on fire. You didn't. You didn't light his property on fire. You lit your property on fire and it spread to his property, but you didn't do anything biadayim to his property. And that's how we're going to explain why it's not a problem on Shabbat.
Sorry, just one point there. There's an opinion in that Sugim Bava Kama that Tchilab B'Shir B'Sofa B'Ones is patur, because it's not just what you did at the beginning, it's also what happens as it carries on. So you are responsible throughout the process.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to look at that Sugya more carefully. Okay, now the next topic is getting to the Mashmiya Kol business. Okay, now I pointed out to you that we're not sure when we get to the end of the Sugya, so is Mashmiya Kol a problem or is it not a problem? According to whom is Mashmiya Kol definitely a problem in the Amoraim?
That was Bet Hillel.
According to Beit Hillel, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. According to Rav Yosef, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing, right? Now, who captures this? The Rishonim, the Rush. The Rush points out, and we can actually, let's start the Rush. Pasak Rabbeinu Chananel, Dilchata Karava, Karava, Dam Rabbeinu Nesha Mashmiot et HaKol. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that it's a problem of Mashmiya Kol. We pass in like Rabba and like Beit Hillel. It's a problem of Mashmiya Kol. V'chein Mashmi L'chor Adekayim Elan Rabba V'Rav Yosef Halacha K'Rabba. Okay, we have a din. We're going to have a few dinim. We have a din that when a Rabba and a Rav Yosef have an argument, the Halacha is like Rabba. Fine. Now, there's another opinion though. We have Rabbeinu Tam. If you want to see, by the way, Rabbeinu Tam is over here on the bottom in the Gemara. V'hash Tadam Rav Oshia Omer Rabbeinu Tam D'Halchata K'Rav Yosef. Demoki Brayta K'Beit Shammai. Now, we'll go back to the Rav Rush because he writes it more clearly what exactly Rabbeinu Tam thinks. Rabbeinu Tam Amar Halacha K'Rav Yosef D'Mishum D'Kai Rav Oshia K'Vatei. He wants to say that Rav Oshaya holds like Rav Yosef. Why? V'dikamar Hashtad Amar Rav Oshaya Amar Rav Asi Iman Tana Shvitat Kem D'Araita. Remember, in the context of the Gemara, after Rav Yosef spoke, right, after Rav Yosef spoke and pointed out that this is a problem of Shvitat Kelim, Rav Oshaya was the one who jumped in and said, oh, but Shvitat Kelim D'Araita is only according to Beit Shammai, but not according to Beit Hillel. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to say that since the Gemara brings up Rav Oshaya, it must mean that Rav Oshaya holds like Rav Yosef. If Rav Hoshaya believes in Hashmat Kol, then why would he bring up Shvitat Kelim and Beit Shammai? Yamidena kebeit Hillel mishum Hashmat Kol. He should have said the same thing as Rabbah. Ela vaday late lay taima de Hashmat Kol. Ulkachutzach lahamidak beit Shammai. Must be that he never heard of Hashmat Kol. And that's why he says that the bright is like Beit Shammai. In Kain Mutala Tetchitin Rechaim Vod Yom, Yitchenim Shabbat, Beitila, the late Ushvitat Kinim. According to Rabbi Natan, you can grind up your wheat in your windmill on Shabbat. And you can do many other things, as we're going to see. According to Rabbi Natan.
According to those who are concerned with Mashmiya Kol, I am not allowed to set an alarm clock to wake me up Shabbat morning, correct?
Let's get to that. Let's hold off on that for just a few minutes, okay? Until we get to Halacha Lamaisa. So Rabbeinu Tam versus Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel says that we paskin Hashmiya Kol is a problem. Rabbeinu Tam says we paskin it's not a problem. There's no such thing. Now, just interesting textually, the Rush is not convinced by Rabbeinu Tam's proof. Rabbeinu Tam wants to say that since Rav Hoshaya explains the Braita according to Beit Shammai, he must hold that the Braita was written by Beit Shammai, and there's no Hashmiya Kol. So the Rush is not convinced. He says, Veina Raya. Remember last time we talked about this, that sometimes you have Amoraim speaking, and sometimes you have the Gemara itself speaking. And so over here, the Rush says, it's not Rav Hoshaya explains the Braita according to Beit Shammai. It's that the Gemara uses Rav Hoshaya to say how the Braita could be explained according to Beit Shammai. Sugya de Hashas Kaamar. It's not Rav Hoshaya talking, it's the Gemara talking. Veinu lo devi Rav Yotiv lo devi Rav Hoshaya. Elamei kara salik adaitayu shal bnei ha-yeshiva. The bnei ha-yeshiva, that's the Gemara. The bnei ha-yeshiva were saying that Rav Yosef, who said that the reason for the Braita is Mishum Shvitat Kelim, that was according to Beit Hillel, until they heard that, oh, no, Rav Hoshaya said that Beit Hillel doesn't believe in Shvitat Kelim, and then they were forced to say that it's actually according to Beit Shammai. But really, maybe Rav Hoshaya does believe in Hashmat Kol. So he's not convinced by Rabbeinu Tam's proof based on Rav Hoshaya. He does mention that the reason why Rav Yosef doesn't... why does Rav Yosef not believe in it? So he says Rav Yosef doesn't believe in it because he's never heard of Hashmat Kol anymore. Look at this. Nicha tfei lo'okma ke Beit Shammai u'mishum shvitat kelim da'ashkechan breita mila'okma ke Beit Hillel mitama griya da'ashmat kol. Milta Charita. What's a Milta Charita again? You guys remember from last time?
Hadash.
It's a new thing. Dilo Ashkechan Bishum Duchta. We never heard of Hashmat Kol before. So that's why Rav Yosef doesn't like Rabbah's Shita. Okay, but Lamaisa. Lamaisa, the Rush says, Mihach Sugya Dilakama Nami Raya de Halacha Karaba. Hilkach Asur Latet Chitin Latoch Rechaim. Ela Kadeshi Itchenu Mibod Yom, Mishum Hashmat Kol. Veleid Lehuli Beitila Shvede Kelim, Valfilu Beda Avid Akli Maaseh. Okay, so we pass like Beit Hillel, but we also pass like Hashmat Kol, like Rabbah. That's what the Rush wants to say. Okay, how does this come down in the halacha? When we look at Shulchan Aruch, what are we going to find? What do you guys think? What are we going to find when we look at the Shulchan Aruch?
I think there will be the Shulchan Aruch will be forgiving about Hashmat Kol.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, let's see. You be the judge. So first of all, the Shulchan Aruch is going to bring down all the halachot that we learned from the Mishnah and the Braita. Mutar liftoach mayim legina v'hem nishachim v'holchim lachal haShabbat. You can create that trench. Ulaniach kilor ava al ha'ayin afa bishasra l'nicho b'Shabbat. And you can put the bandage on your eye on Erev Shabbat even though you can't do it on Shabbat. Vid latet mugmar tachat akelim hen mitmagmir me'aleim kol haShabbat v'afilu mugmar munach b'chli. And you can do the mugmar as well. The Ein Adam Mitzuvah al Shvitat Kelim. Okay, so we pass like Beit Hillel. There's no Shvitat Kelim. V'latet Sa'orim b'gigit l'sharotan, to put the Sa'orim and the gigit in order to have them soak. You're allowed to do that. V'tonin b'korat Beit Abad v'hagat mi'bod yom azitim v'anavim, and you're allowed to put them on the press. V'shemen v'yayin hayotzim hem mutar. V'chein boser, umililot, etc., etc., etc. And then, mutar latet chitin letoch rechaim shalmaim, Samuch l'chashecha. Shulchan Aruch says, you're allowed to put the chitim and tochel rechayim samuch l'chashecha before Erev Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos. So, what does Shulchan Aruch say?
What does the
windmill
mean?
That's the windmill, okay. Or the watermill, who knows?
Okay.
So what is the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Like whom? Like Rav Yosef, there's no Hashmaz call, right? Now the Rama explains, and he says, "V'lo chayshinan l'hashmat kol, she'amru rechayim shel ploni tochnot b'shabbat." That's interesting also, because the Rama says we're not worried about hashmat kol. What is the concern of hashmat kol? What's the concern according to the Rama?
Maritain.
At some kind of maritain, right? That people are going to say that you're doing it on Shabbat, right? So that's the Rama explaining the Shulchan Aruch. But then the Rama says, "V'yesh osrim berechaim ubekol makom yesh lachush lahashmat kol." But then there are those that are strict, and in any case of hashmat kol, and he quotes the Torah and Tosfot and the Rush and the Smak and the Smak and the Sefer Truma and the Hagot Meimoniot and the Marivil and the Agur, the Hachi Nahog lechatchila. And this is the halacha lechatchila. In other words, you can't do it lechatchila. Mihu, but makom seida yesh lahakel. However, in a case of great loss, you can be makel. So, in a case of great loss, you can be makel on hashmat kol.
Are we talking about in public, or we're talking about maridayin, or even in my own home privately?
That's a good question.
Something that makes noise, like getting back to my alarm clock question.
That's a great question. So I can tell you that Rav Schechter, in his Eretz HaTzvi, so he says you're not allowed to use an alarm clock on Shabbat. And I actually confirmed it with him. I went over to him and I said, are you serious? I didn't say, are you serious? But I said, is this real? Because I never heard anybody say this. Nobody else says this. And he says, yes, it's real, but not for the reason that you think. Not because other people will hear it, but because once there is a gzera of Hashmat Kol, so it applies, this kind of gzera applies even when other people are not going to hear it. It applies in all situations, and you're not even allowed to arrange it from before Shabbat. Obviously, that's the whole point. Most people don't agree with this, and especially if your alarm clock, if your alarm clock won't be heard, you know, outside of your room, most people don't agree with this. And if you need to wake up in the morning, I was giving the psak that if you need to wake up in the morning, like let's say, you know, it's important for your livelihood that you be on time to shul. So then you shouldn't worry about this too much. But Rav Schechter is machmir on this. It's in his Eretz HaTzvi.
And what level of noise does he say is also?
You know, I couldn't get a good impression. I think of even a very small level of noise.
How does he wake up for Shabbos, Rob?
I don't know. He just does. different generation.
Shabbos is never late for sure.
It's a different generation.
I asked this question to from Summit, because you know Summit do these dishwashers.
Yeah. So they right, dishwashers.
And I said to him, isn't there an issue of Hashmat Kol? And he said the level of modern dishwashers is not an issue.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Because the truth is that when you look in almost any Hilchot Shabbos book, the prime example of Hashmat Kol in the modern day is dishwashers. Not dishwashers, but actually, I should correct myself, is washing machines. Washing machines. What if you want to put your wash in the washing machine and then you'll have it ready for you on Shabbat? Why not? Right? So if you look at almost any Hilchos Shabbos book, they always say it's Aser because of Hashmat Kol. Now, Meir, dishwashers is probably correct. Dishwashers don't make much noise.
The washing machine was a real issue for Chayalim.
I know.
Late on Friday afternoon and need to leave Motzei Shabbos.
I know. That's where it's brought up all the time. It's always brought up. I don't think things have changed. I think if you look at almost any standard Hilchot Shabbos book, it'll say washing machine's still a problem. Look at this. The Rama is actually a funny ending. He says, Umutar la'amid klei mashkolet shekorin zayger me'erev Shabbat. Ava bishamashmiya kol hodiyah hashaot b'Shabbat. What is that?
Zeiger's a watch. A clock.
Yeah, this is basically a cuckoo clock, no?
It's a clock, yeah. It's a clock.
With a cuckoo clock.
I don't know. It's some kind of clock that makes noise.
Uh-huh. A grandfather clock.
It's an alarm clock or a grandfather clock.
Yeah, it's like Big Ben.
Like the one in your home, Pinchas. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's like Big Ben every hour on the hour. I don't know how this is different from what Rav Schachter is talking about. I have no idea. Well, so here you go. Because everybody knows that you did it from the day before. I don't know why Rav Schachter wasn't satisfied by this. But yeah, he wasn't. In other cases of Hashmad Kol, by the way, the Ramah mentions in other places, or maybe it's in the Mishnah Berurah right here, actually, I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly where it is. This is an issue with door knockers. Door knockers are a problem for Ashkenazim for this reason. Because I don't know if you guys remember door knockers, where you had we had them in Brooklyn, where you had like this metal thing that you pull back and then you let go and it bangs against another metal thing. So many say that that's Hashmat Kol on Shabbat.
It's knocking on the door. If you want to be strict about it.
So it's Hashmat Kol is getting back to the yelling thing. Hashmat Kol is only a problem with kelim, when you're doing it with kelim. If you're doing it with your hand, so there's no possible malacha over there. Okay.
A doorbell would be the same thing then. A non-electronic doorbell.
What's a non-electronic doorbell?
A good old-fashioned bell.
Yes, 100% it would be a problem. Yeah. That would 100% be a problem. It could be a problem of Metak and Kli as well, because of music, noisemakers. Anyways. Now the Mishnah Berurah comments and says, Klal Bazeh, Now, it's not clear to me if Ziluta de Shabta is the same thing as the Ramaz Chayshinan Sheyomru Rechaim Shaploni Tochnot B'Shabbat. Is the problem here that people are going to think that you did a malacha? Or is the problem here that it's disrespectful to Shabbos to have a noise-making malacha happen on Shabbos?
The second option.
Yeah, so if you take a look at the rest of the Mishnah Berurah, Mishnah Berurah says, V'imari chayim shal eno Yehudi. What happens if it's not your windmill, it's your wheat, but not your windmill? V'vadei shari letei lotochami bodyom. Pretty amazing. As long as it's not your windmill, it's fine for you to do it. V'hu adin imiskiro leino Yehudi. And what can you also do? You can rent your... You can rent out your windmill to a non-Jew. And he can do it. V'im ha'Yisrael masar leinu yudi atvua mibod yom, as av imeinu yudi tochen otam b'shabbat, shari b'katzatz. You can even have him do it for you with your tvua.
So it's not the noise.
Well, it's definitely the noise. It's definitely the noise, but it's the noise with the malacha. De'enu yudi adate de'nafshe avid. Because the non-Jew is going to do it for his own sake. What can you not do? Shelo yamod Yisrael etzlo the mechzik ishlucho. You can't stand next to him because then it looks like he's your shaliach and he's doing the malacha for you on Shabbat. Okay? Now why is this important? So here we go again with Pesach. Uletzorech haPesach mutar liYisrael liot omed sham liot shelo yitchametz. Lechein mutar lehoshiv shomer shelo yignov ha'enu Yehudi. Ubevat shelo yidaber imo b'shum esek. So this is basically a mashgiach tmidi on Shabbat, right? Where you have somebody standing there, just for Pesach, he's standing there watching the non-Jew do malacha on Shabbat, but he's watching him doing it in order to make sure that he doesn't cause chametz and to make sure that he doesn't steal it, but you have to kind of stand like fly on the wall, like you can't be noticeable, so that nobody should think that you're actually directing him. Okay, now here's a wild Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham over here, he also talks, he's the source of this din for Pesach, and he says, "Avleim hashat tzricha lekach, kegon tzamuch lepesach, rashaya Yisrael lishmo harichayim shalo yitchametz." You're allowed to leave the reichayim to make sure that it doesn't become chametz. The hashvut deshvuti, afilu noten Yisrael harichayim b'shabbat. Even if the Jew puts the wheat into the Rechayim on Shabbat, leka chiyuv chatat, ad sheyitchon Rechayim shel yad. The Magen Avraham says that even if you were to put the wheat into the windmill on Shabbat, you wouldn't be chayav midaraita. you'd only be chayav midarabanan. Why?
He doesn't do anything with his hand. It's nature does it.
What are you referring to, Pinchas? What's the rule?
There's no maaseh.
There's no maaseh. He put it on there. He put it on the rechayim.
Yeah, but the tchina is not his maaseh.
But he put it on the rechayim, and the rechayim did the tchina. So what? Why is it not his maaseh? What's this called?
Melechet maaseh.
Well, lichora, many achronim say, explaining this Magen Avraham, he's saying it's grama. That's what the Chazon Ish seems to say. It's grama. He puts it on, and then the rechayim goes through this process, and then it happens. Now, it's kind of iffy, this kind of grama, because, well, I mean, unless we assume that it takes a long time for it to happen, then maybe it's not. Then maybe it's understandable. But it's designed for this. So it's pretty amazing that the Magen Avraham should say that this is grama, if that's it, if that is what he says. Because this is how he explains, by the way. Hold on. He has to explain why Beit Shammai thinks that this is a problem. He has to explain why this is not a separate problem of Beit Shammai. Yeah. Okay, so a lot of people have problems with this Magen Avraham, but we don't have time exactly to get into it right now. I did want to show you two more things. I wanted to show you this Igrot Moshe, and if we have time, the Chazon Ish. I don't think we'll have time for the Chazon Ish. This is a classic landmark Igrot Moshe, where he lost. Okay, he very clearly and obviously lost this fight. All right, I've probably taught this, you know, dozens of times, this Igrot Moshe. We don't have time to do the whole thing inside. But who he's dealing with is Malacha Hanaseit B'Shabbat Aidei Shaon Shabbat B'Erev Be'ezrat Hashem Yitbarach Kaf Tevet Tafshin Lamed Zayin. So that would place it 40 years ago.
77.
Right? That would place it more than 40 years ago. That would be, yeah, 43 years ago. Okay, so not less than 43 years ago, he wrote this tshuva. And this is written to his son-in-law, Rav Mordechai Tendler. He says, Hine Badavar, Badavar, sorry, it's written to his grandson, Mordechai Tendler, his son-in-law, Rav Moshe Tendler. Yeah, that's Mordechai Tendler. His son-in-law is Rav Moshe Tendler. Yeah. So he says, Hine Badavar, Shalidea Hashmal, Inyan Ha'Elektri, Esharidea Morasha'o, Tanasa Lakach, Shamidenu Be'er Shabbat, Ba'ofen Shiatchil Vashel, Machar B'yom Shabbat. Can you use a Shabbos timer to start your cooking the next day on Shabbat? Like turn it on an hour before it's time to eat. A hot plate. Yeah? Aharon Baruch Shoel Pashut Shasur Lahatirza. Says, I think it's Pashut that we have to be Mahmir and we cannot allow this. Dahare, Aidemor Shaot Kazay Cholim Lasot Kol Hamlachot Shabbat. Bukho Batecharoshet factories Vein Khalizilzul Gadol Shabbat Mise. Ramosha wanted to answer Shaune Shabbat, both in Gorefet, across the board, because he was concerned that what?
Zilzul.
Zilzul Shabbat.
He says it's the end of Shabbat. You can do anything with a Shabbos timer. You can do anything. You start any of your machines with a Shabbos timer.
What does he mean with a factory? He means a totally automated factory with no humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least with the Malacha. Ubarur, Shim Hayazeb is Manatanaim Vamuraim, Ayu Ostrinzeh. What an amazing statement. He says it's clear to him that if they had this at that in their time, they would have said it's Asur. Kamosha Asur Bamir La Akum. The same way that they said you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you. Vigamu Lai Bimimela Bihlali Sur said the Asur Amir Akum. And then he suggests maybe it's even Amir La Akum itself using a Shabbos timer. Dasu Komalachanas is Bishfil Yisrael Mitzad Amirota Yisrael. Vikolshigan mitzad Masa Yisrael. All right, this is a great segue into artificial intelligence and robots, etc., etc. Velodak velav davka lamasha muter lahamid kedera. Velodami lamasha muter lahamid kedera al gabi haesh. Afilu rega achat kodem Shabbat. Oh, what about the fact that you're allowed to put a kedera on top of the fire a minute before Shabbat so that it will actually cook on Shabbat? So you are allowed to cause malacha to happen on Shabbat. No, that's specific to Bishul, because Bishul, you don't actually do anything. You just put it on, and then the Bishul happens by itself. However, he says, if you do something where your act is not considered the end of your involvement, right? It's not like you just put it down and let it go and it's going to continue by itself. No, here you put in a little chupchik in the Shaon and Shabbat and you wind it up, and then you know that the malacha is only going to happen on Shabbat. He wants to say, call the whole thing off. No Shonei Shabbat at all. What does he quote next?
For any reason. He's not just talking about cooking. He's talking, for example, even air conditioners, for example.
Oh. Yeah? It's funny that you should give that example. Because, let's see if I can find it. Just a second. Here. I didn't want to do this, Dad, but you forced me to jump all the way to the end.
I didn't force you to do anything. Al kopanim, mashik far nagu
lahamid al demor shaod lachabot tanirot elektri. Apparently, before he even wrote this tshuva, people were using Shabbos timers for lights. Shehudugu v'gam shiachzu lehidadik achar kach b'sof hayom. He says, because the lighting and putting out of lights is ancient. We used to ask non-Jews to do this for us in the Beit Midrash or in a shul, right? You know, we all know this. If the lights are out on Shabbos and shul, what do you do if you're in Chutz Laretz? You get the janitor, right? And that's fine if it's for shul, okay? Not in your own home. But we can at least see how they're connected. So he says, so that's okay to do with lights. However, he says, Ein lasor mashak far nagu lahakel beamda lahalekshir be'er Shabbos, la'idei mor ha'shaot. Not going to be osir, something that people already do. He doesn't actually talk about it. The reason I was going over here is because I'm pretty sure he mentions specifically air conditioners.
I had heard, I don't know if it's in this shul, but I had heard, the reason I mentioned it is because I had heard that Rav Moshe had a problem with timers for air conditioners.
He did. I thought it was in this shuva. Maybe it's in a different shuva, but I thought it was in this shuva. So he allows it for lights, but he doesn't allow it for other things. I thought he mentioned specifically air conditioners, especially because air conditioners make noise.
In the air conditioner, if we're talking about the level of noise, it's certainly less noise than your washing machine.
The air conditioner itself?
If we're talking about level of noise, are we quantifying
maybe inside the
noise?
Maybe inside the house, but outside the house, they make plenty of noise.
Okay.
If you open the window, you'll hear it too.
Yes.
Oh man, I really thought that it was here. Hold on, let's do a quick search. See if we can find it. Let me see quick. what was I thinking? What was I gonna say? Timer. Moshe's incredible ruling.
There was one in the previous one. Yes.
Here.
Previous one was about asking a guy. It wasn't about I didn't see one about a timer.
Oh, here's a whole article about it. Okay. Why is it so small? I have no idea. Okay.
Alarm clock is here.
Alarm clock being heard in one room is permitted. Oh, this is an alarm clock. I'm looking for air conditioner. Air conditioner. Here we go. Here we go. Turn on oven. Ah, so maybe he doesn't say it specifically about air conditioners. It's all the same tshuva. All the same tshuva.
Maybe we extrapolate air conditioners from what his opinion is about lights.
Hold on, maybe there is one more. Five. Give me 1 second. Let's see if I can find it. If not, then we'll continue. Igros Moshe. We're going to stop in a minute.
Yes, there's no issue.
Where are you reading?
Permitted for Onik Shabbat.
Five.
We'll assume that a unit is controlled by a thermostat or as a shul was built for simple. There is no issue with the yoke.
Yeah, but that's what he's saying. Which, of course, that's why I say Rav Moshe lost. Nobody passes like what Rav Moshe says. Everybody uses Shabbos timers for as many things as they can.
Except your colleague at work who doesn't believe in them.
Right, except for my colleague at work. Right, except for Leon. Leon doesn't. Leon holds like Rav Moshe.
The Talmud of Rav Moshe.
Exactly. Where is it? No, I don't see that he talks specifically about air conditioners. That's strange. I think it's always just brought up in that way. Maybe that's why they got conflated in my mind. I thought that they were talking about it. Okay, he doesn't say anything about specifically about air conditioners. Fine.
Rav Dani, but just going back a second to a washing machine.
Yeah.
Okay. If a washing machine doesn't make noise, then is it mutar?
If the washing machine doesn't make any noise at all.
Yes.
Then yeah, why not?
I mean, for example, we got a new washing machine about a month ago, and I've never actually used it, but mm-hmm. It has a quiet setting, which right. I believe a quiet setting is supposed to be so you can be in the same room with it and not hear it.
Try it out. Let us know.
But don't try it on Shabbos yet.
No, don't try it on Shabbos.
But I'm saying, and then you could set it before Shabbos. To go on, let's say, a 20-hour thing to finish before Shabbos came out and hanging the washing up after Shabbat?
Potentially, but then again, you have an issue of muktzah, where the clothes, if they were unusable, you know, on Erev Shabbat, then maybe they remain unusable on Shabbat. But I'm not sure.
No, not on Shabbat. Then you.
Oh, you want to use it after Shabbat. You put it, Yeah.
I'll actually test. I'll do a load and test and see if it actually is quiet on the spin and everything.
Yeah, let us know. Yeah. All right, we're going to stop here because there's going to be Maariv in 3 minutes, and I'd like to dive in with them. But Shkoyach, everyone.
Shkoyach.
Yeah.
Shkoyach
to you.
Shkoyach, thanks.
Shkoyach to everyone.